to have you all here. And we've got some guests here today, and we'll get you to you in just a moment.
I think you should have Mr. Weiss introduce himself.
Yeah.
Mr. Weiss.
Yeah. Hey, I came from the big city, Evanston. My name's John Weiss. I'm the CEO and president of Heritage Auto. We've got five smaller dealerships, Northern Utah, one up in Vernal, one up in Evanston. This is my first time in this meeting. I was kidding when I was sworn in a couple months ago in November. I didn't want to tell you guys that I was in a hunting blind. That's why I didn't turn the camera on. I was in Nebraska, so it was quite the event. But I don't, I've yet to know the purpose or the meaning of this, so I'll observe until I figure out what it's all about. I'm pleased to be here. I recognize some of you. You might not recognize me, but you've been around a while. And my family's been in the business a long time, my in-laws, so I was introduced into it 20, 25 years ago.
So you've been full-time that long?
Yeah. Yeah, so I took over from the Davises and the Davis Auto Group since 13.
Great people.
2013, and they've retired. Grandpa still wants to go buy cars. I gotta keep him away from the auction.
So is Grandpa Davis?
Yeah, Clay.
What a good man.
He just turned 94, so.
Well,
what day did he turn 94?
December, late December.
Was it the 20th?
Yeah.
Because Stevens, that birthday is on the 20th, and so is my dad. Oh. I think late is the same day. I'm not sure. You would know.
It's around that time.
Yeah, it is around that time.
I think it is, Stephen. You and my dad and Clay, I was all born on the same day. My dad would have been 94.
Wow.
Well, you have a great legacy.
So he's not 94.
Do you office in Evanston?
No, my corporate office is in Logan at the new store that we built. And I don't have general managers at my store, so I go to all the stores all the time. So I'm always driving.
Tell us your stores again.
Well, we've got the one in Logan, which is a Chrysler store, a Ford Chrysler store in Tremont, a Chrysler store in Rio City, a Ford store out in Vernal, up in Showalters in 19. Chevy store in Evanston.
What about the used to have a store in Richfield?
Davis's used to partner with a guy named Joe Batar, and I'm a classic runners. Mm-hmm. We've been with them forever. He bought them out as well.
Showalters, what a great situation.
Yeah.
Yeah, is Gary still around?
Yeah, he is.
There's another character.
Yeah.
Well, that should be a good store for
you. Go in his office.
Well, you ought to see it now. I actually had to kick him out of his office. He stuck around forever. He's like, Gary, you got to get going. I got to clean this place up.
There would have been some old documents in there.
Oh, it was horrible. He'd sit in there and smoke cigars.
Love the guy.
Steven, if you have one story, I'll tell you. About Gary Scholl, it would take only a second.
Let me go ahead.
I want to hear. So when I just started the association, I didn't know anybody, and I was just going around and visiting, and I didn't know Gary Showalter, and I introduced myself, and I didn't know about him. Like, you could go into his office, and you could tell. It was pretty cluttered. He knew where things were, but it was cluttered, stuff piled all over the floor and every place else. It was in really an old gas station to convert it. And so he said, "Would you do me a favor?" And I said, "Well, sure. Happy to help." He said, "And you go back here and see, they built a little bit of a rise just before you go into the shop. And on just a little stair that goes up, and just maybe it was 10 by 10. And there was his bookkeeper there, an older lady. And he said, "Would you just go and tell her you're from the IRS and you'd like to have all the documents now?" And I thought, well, okay. So I went around the corner and I went up the steps, and I don't know her name, but maybe Evelyn. And I said, "Evelyn, I'm Frederick Warren, I'm from the IRS, could I have all your documents?" She just got all flustered and scurried and went like this. this, and I look back, he was busted up and just laughing beside himself down the way just a little bit. And he said, "Craig, I got to tell you, this is years later. Remember that story?" I go, "Oh, yeah, I remember that." He said, "I would go visit her. She was in a care center, and she finally died." This has been maybe 8 or 10 years ago, but that's Gary Showalter.
Yeah,
a dry sense of humor.
Character.
But a character. Okay, not done.
Well, call it the official call to order in a story or two. So why don't we move on? Do we do a Pledge of Allegiance?
We can if you'd like.
Well, is it normal?
If you like, we
well,
have more.
Okay, I think we're all moved up. If you don't, that's not protocol. So let's go to move with. We don't need a roll call, do we?
I probably could do that today. That'd probably be advisable.
So we'll start with you.
Here.
Yes.
Hey.
Clint Martin, Automax.
Kirk Schneider, Nate Wade Subaru.
Stephen Wade, Chair. Anybody else? Okay.
You want us to?
Yes.
So, Wayne Jones representing the used car industry as well as the RV and power.
Jason Bickmore, new car dealer.
Okay, Bickmore, new car dealer.
Alicia Hunter, dealer education.
Say, who are you with, Alicia?
MBEDUtah.com, dealer education.
Okay, thank you.
And then I'm Alan Shin, I'm the Director of Motor Vehicle Enforcement.
Cole McAfee, Assistant Director of Motor Vehicle Enforcement.
Larry Ball, Deputy Director of Motor Vehicle Enforcement.
Maria Islas, I am the manager, so.
Thank you all, appreciate you all being here. So, do we have any public comments from anybody? Do you have a comment?
No, not today.
Okay, anyone else?
I guess I kind of would like to just, since Mr. Weiss is here, and we're honored to have you here, as we are everybody here. I'm Alan Shinney with the division. I think it's imperative to know how important it is that we be on top of current events and things that are happening in the industry, because honestly, the bills that I reviewed today with the law enforcement side of things, there's more things that are flying under the radar that's going to affect the industry this year than probably a couple years in the past. So, oh, there's all kinds of things going on, from requiring license plates on ATVs to getting rid of your front plates and giving a dollar to the highway patrol to turn a blind eye to that enforcement action, whether or not you're for or against that. My kids are adamantly against the front plate, and they go, "Dad, if you have a Corvette, you can't put a front plate on it." And I go, "Well, I don't have a Corvette last time I checked, but regardless, there's a new generation of people moving into some control and some influence that are affecting a lot of decisions that affect our trainers in the industry, both new and used, and the RV side and power sports side. And I think that we should all be aware of those things and pay attention to them, because it does affect us all. And it's not always about, like, you know, I just got an email right now from a dealer, a new dealer, that's upset because he got pulled over by the highway patrol for claiming to misusing a dealer plate. Well, my suggestion is, if you want to give a dollar to the highway patrol, give them a dollar for education. They're gonna know what the laws are instead of interpreting the laws. And I'll draft another letter and send it out to the new and used industry about the use of dealer plates. But this dealer was not abusing the dealer plate, and we need to educate people on all aspects of the industry, and we need to know about these things if things happen, because knowledge is power, and if we don't know it, we can't circumvent it. So just be aware that there's some things going on this year. We'll kind of go into those things in detail, but John, you're a voice at the table now that's important, that you know who your representative is, who you can contact if you have concerns, and then definitely, hopefully, represent the new and used car dealers and the RVs and the power sports and all the decisions that are made. And I would encourage everyone to be involved in this legislative cycle. I mean, I bother my legislator all the time. And so I would encourage you all to do so in a positive way, but we need to definitely take care of business. Enough said. It's just always constantly. I just don't know what else to do about
just
it.
Just pull him over for no other reason?
No other reason. No outside of you can't use a dealer plate for personal use. And that is just not accurate. Yeah. And that is just nothing more than, you know, it's not good, so.
That seems to me that's problem lies with the ones that are in charge and not explaining and teaching their staff the proper things. Well, those are ongoing things we'll have to deal with through, I think. Have we had a chance to look at the minutes, the previous minutes? Do I have any comments about the previous minutes, anything we need to discuss or talk about, or can we approve them as they are?
Mr. Chairman, I would like to motion that we accept the minutes as prepared.
Okay, a motion, you have a second?
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any negatives? Ayes have it. We'll proceed. MBED business?
I guess I'd like to, I don't want to really go off on too much of a ramble. This is, like I said, this is an important year. We all need to pay attention to the things because I don't know what Craig and Wayne have as far as agenda items or things they want to talk about because a lot of them will overlap, so I'll just pass on that. But I just want to let you guys know that for the calendar year of 2021, and we started, I believe, from the last board meeting we had before the July one when COVID issues had just been a rolling thunder. We haven't been able to stay above and anticipate a lot of the things that are happening, but just keep things in perspective as far as we are here to help and hopefully be a logical voice in the bureaucracy of some governmental issues. We've had some successes and failures with some DMV matters. I'm pretty excited to announce that we delivered 333 titles for dealers that were not able to get titles, where they acquired them legally and lawfully through the auctions, and there was no assistance on the auction side except for turning a blind eye to the problem. So we were able to...
They were good at cashing checks.
Correct. They're very good at that. They also checked my LinkedIn profile, and I got a call from the Clark County Attorney's Office to threaten me with charges, and I told them I was going to charge them within the federal system for they delivered 155 titles Mannheim auction in Nevada without delivering titles. Now that's unacceptable, and we have to continue to do something about this. There's a lot of things that we've done to prevent. So of the 333 titles that we delivered in 2021, we had four that came up where there's issues, and all four of them were resolved, and all three of them were the auction's fault out of state, and one was a dealer's fault in Utah that didn't pay the auction. As soon as we threatened them with filing a false police report, they took care of it. So this is really not an industry thing. It's a interstate issue, and if your dealerships, if you're not counseling your new and used and through training efforts to let them know that we can help, especially if they have a receipt from the auction, that I think that you're not representing your constituents very well, because we do have the authority to do it, and we have been taking advantage of that. But also, today is January 18th, right?
Yep.
I'm getting old. It's 18th. We've already delivered over 100 titles just in the month of January, and all these were auction cars. So I don't know if there was a big splurge of buying in November and October, because these are all like expired. Like, so the 45-day permits are expired, and we are right now working on some criteria, because obviously some of the dealers get so frustrated with the auctions, they're coming right to us before the 45 days. And this is where, if we don't have a discussion with your title clerks and your owners and this board, where we have a way of thinking, and sometimes it's not accurate, because I had a title clerk really educate me emphatically about that I was not helping on one, and after she explained it to me, I issued the title, because this particular customer was not going to allow the temporary permit to expire without wanting the deal unwound. So there's always circumstances that can change something either way, and the more we know, the better we are to help. But there's no doubt that our primary function at MBD is not to be the DMV And I honestly think that the industry should be asking them to come up with a solution, because they haven't come up with any solutions. And I don't know what else to say more than that. Am I missing something?
No, but I'd like to comment on it. This is Stephen Wade. There's one who lives on the border between the bottom of the state. This is so important to us. I mean, without your assistance and the help that we've had, we would be in such a hole. We would be repurchasing these cars. We would be buying them back. We would be causing undue problems and challenges, because we've got states that just lock the door, blame everything on COVID that they can, and without your assistance, and it needs to be a matter of record that we appreciate immensely what you're doing, how hard you're working towards this, and how much of a problem we'd be in if we didn't have this. And if we didn't have this, the end result would be catastrophic of what could happen, and having to buy things back and repurchase and deal with it. So we can't thank you enough. And that needs to be a matter of record, how much it's appreciated and how important it is.
I also think Alan Shinney with the division, we had a meeting the first of the year, like you're talking right after the holidays ended, with all the CEOs of the credit unions and financial institutions of the state. They were emphatically unrested, and they will not stop until electronic titling is approved and passed. They said that they, because look, whether or not they're a victim or not a victim is the underlying question, but the courts have said they're not a victim, because they're not the ones that are purchasing the vehicle, and the fact is they won't let them out of the financial responsibility if a title's not delivered. So it is in their interest, obviously, because it's a collateral loan with the value of the vehicle as the security, but if they're not delivered, they don't let the clients out of their loan payments. So the AG's office has emphatically said they're not victims, but they are victims, just in a different way. And we listened to what they had to say, and they brought up some interesting facts about how other states are doing and everything we know, because we've worked hand in hand with the industry. But as we continue on this process, I honestly think that the whole big picture of it is it's new and used and all of the above. And the state is really kind of behind the curve, but we're working on some issues. I don't have a delivery date. I don't know if Craig knows more about it, what's going on, or if we've hit a snag, but they knew more about it than what I've ever imagined, and I don't know who their sources are, but they claimed, correct me if I'm wrong, they were going to sponsor a bill and make it mandatory and have a cutoff date of when electronic titling was initiated.
You're saying they, who do you mean by?
The credit union.
Association.
The League of Credit Unions.
Correct.
So it's not just a particular credit union?
No, it's their
association. It was all of them. America First, Mountain America, Wells Fargo was there. I mean, you're talking they were all there. And their president of their association was, last name, wasn't it Stevenson?
Scott Smith.
Scott, yeah, he reached out to all three of us since then, and he's fired questions away, but they are definitely not going to rest until that's done.
So, okay.
Yeah.
Can I just mention, I'm pleased that you mentioned that meeting. Here is what I think, in my opinion, and we've worked on this for a long time, like a long time.
Yeah.
And so I think the state is ready to have that done. We're ready to have that done. The credit union is obviously ready to have that done. It is able to be done currently if the dealers want to go through the self-plating process. But and get that, some dealers are doing that. The hiccup is, in mass, to get this done, we need to have an EMS provider, and we had Arizona, remember, a couple years ago, all queued up. There was a fee attached to that, and so the dilemma was, as the dealers were saying, and I don't blame them. I mean, everything I think is really ready to get this done. But the thought is, okay, let's do the self-plating. We simply copy and paste and put it into the Vader system and it gets done. That's a little cumbersome. The thing that we propose, the solution, is a third party, i.e. Arizona, them come in, go into your EMS, collect the data, move it in, and get that done electronically. Unfortunately, there was a fee attached. So since, and it's another call to a predominant DMS provider, that's where the issue is. The DMS providers are third-party providers of that service, and they want to be paid. I don't blame them for being paid, but it's silly, in my opinion, to have not a button on that DMS where they can simply just download the information and send it to a system that's already ready to have it done. And so with this impetus with the credit unions, I need to again go back to a predominant DMS provider who we had a conference call 3 weeks ago, and they turned it over to somebody else. There, I think, is the hesitancy, is two things. It's all about the money, follow the money. And we just need to share with them the urgency that certainly the dealers can do it now, but it's duplicative. We need to simply have a process where the DMS providers allow their customers to be able to link in with a push of a button. So thank you for that. We'll go back after the thing.
Can I ask two follow-up questions?
Yeah. Yeah, so that's where we're at.
So first, the DMS system, that would only work for the dealers that are on that one particular DMS system.
That's
that
correct.
That would solve some of the
that's
problem.
Correct. That's correct.
And second, would it be worth considering a two-tiered implementation, the duplicitousness of copy and pasting from this system to that system to press forward, and then maybe as dealers get sick or tired of it, then they can reach out to their own DMS systems. It wouldn't be super hard to write an API. It's something that would take the information from here and copy it here. I don't think that would be so crazy, but it would have to be done for each of the main DMS systems.
So,
and I don't know if there's any funding anywhere.
Yeah, so the thought process on that, I think it's not a matter of getting the API, because the open architecture exists. The state's done that already. Mm-hmm. I think the deal is that it's they don't want to give up the means.
I would guess most DMS systems will allow an API to reach in.
I think they will. It's, in my opinion now, so in my opinion, is the hesitancy to give away or give up the revenue model. So the duplicative piece is you all can do that now, correct?
No.
They go through the Vader system with the self-plater to do that.
Yes and no. That, I correct me if I'm wrong. There, I don't know very many used dealers that have access to that right now.
Not the used, I'm sorry.
The new car side.
And personally, I honestly think that it's time for that discussion to happen, because we have, it would actually, it's more of a problem on the used car side, and we don't get that out as much, and it probably needs to be. That there's a lot of work that needs to be done there, and it really is overdue. Yes.
Yeah. I've got a news chairman. Can I comment on that? Mr. Chairman?
Please. Please.
I think there's two issues that need to be addressed, particularly on the used car site. One of those is there are so many independent dealers that use so many different types of DMS systems. Some of them don't even use a DMS system, and those are fewer and far between, but there are so many DMS systems. The other issue that we've even dealt with being doing all the plating for all the dealers that we do is security, because we've asked for certain things to be done even with the system we have, and it always comes down to security. So if you're going to let, I guess, literally hundreds of DMS systems into there, is there the firewalls and the protections and that sort of thing that can be implemented, and the consistency of what information is needed to put in there. So I think those are two other issues. So the new car side is a much, much different than independent, and you're exactly right. The used car side is probably more problematic than the other.
But in all honesty, as we talk about security, we have tons of security that we have to go through with the state.
Yeah.
And a lot of it's like they have firewalls, and you can put in codes. There's so many different ways they can go. I mean, we're doing it right now for dismantlers that have been complained because they're not getting the right service and they have access. And I would think that a lot of the dismantlers in the state have way far less access than some successful used dealers. So there's always a way.
Even using a credit card is problematic.
Exactly.
On the DMV system, because there are so many restrictions. We can't, as a player, we can't use, there are many restrictions we have where we can't use a credit card. for a dealer to use a credit card. And to me, that's really problematic because all the dealers are paying the extra amount for every transaction, whether they use a credit card or not. In this place, they're saying, no, you can't, but you still get charged a fee. But that's what the code says, so.
Seems to me, rather than trying to reinvent the wheel, that we ought to see what other states are doing and how they've handled this, and where those have been successful, trying to follow that model. Yes,
Craig? Well, to answer your question, Stephen, the research that we've done a lot over the years, many states have third-party systems that, for example, I won't give numbers, but big states, Virginia being one, California has another, big states have third-party systems where there's X per transaction. Arizona, we were going to use them, and they are the only designated by code titling source in the state of Arizona.
Provider,
period. And so there is a fee attached to that transaction.
What's the fee?
Our fee here, I don't know if there was, our fee here for that was $15 a transaction. And we rolled that out, and Dieter said, you know, we're not going to do that because somebody here at this store who's a title person, I can do 20 or 30 of those in an hour. We don't need to pay $500 to have those things done. And so in other states, they have those models and that interface. And so it's time again to go back to, and again, it's been less than a month that we talked to. Our goal was in this is to get to a provider, start from the new car side first thing, and to get a new car provider help us to do this and move on so that it would replicate itself. And I can see that the hesitancy is still there. So can I take an assignment, Stephen? Let us go back again to the DMS providers and see where they are again.
How the rest of you feel about that?
Well, I mean, I would start to plan against another main provider. I mean, you're not naming them. I can imagine which one's based
here.
You're
not naming any.
But reach out to another one and just say, oh, it's okay if you don't want to do it. These other guys want to. And I'm sure it's going to, you know, it could be one strategy to plan against each other.
Yeah, we've had good relationships with this. It may be just we just need to take it up again. So we'll take it up again.
Seems to be that knowledge is power there.
And we would like to be involved in those conversations because the bigger problem is with these developments.
It is.
So I know you've been dealing with them. I mean, new car MSOs are a non-discrete
problem.
That's not accurate. Now, you'd be surprised.
Well, as the letter said, it's so minute compared to the big picture.
So 20 years ago, when we were a NASCAR election away from controlling a major DMS provider. Oh, how I wish we'd have done that. But that's history. But that would have solved a lot of trouble, but we're not there. And so we'll just do what we can do to encourage and ask for help. So we'll make that call before the end of the day.
I think that you did touch on a key point. Some of the questions that were addressed 5 and 6 years ago need to be readdressed now because there's different leadership involved now,
yep.
And there's been too many things that have changed that I believe that some of the stumbling blocks have been removed if it's proposed the right way.
I agree. Andrea, thank you. It's great. We'll keep after it.
Question on the 330 titles that you delivered, they're all auctions, right? Are they
90% of them were auctioned?
Are they lease returns?
A big proportion of those have been lease returns, and that has been the big problem because as these leases came about, they were an inventory magnet for the industry that has no cars coming in. So a lot of big dealers or a lot of auctions were getting them from the manufacturers, per se, and just dumping them without letting the – when Toyota Motor Credit is closed down, they're closed. And they were selling these in masses and just making a note that you may not get a title, but we sold this car to you for a reduced price. Well, that doesn't circumvent the law.
So is the auction paying the company, even though the company hasn't delivered title? Or if the auctioner's just got a mass of cash, they're
Toyota,
sitting
on. They don't care.
I don't know. That's the point.
I think a lot of them are based out of Nevada and California. At least my experience.
Right.
You guys don't know. But most DMVs are so many months behind.
Toyota Motor Credit, though, they're out of Georgia, and they were holding, and Georgia was shut down too. And it just depends on, you know, how big they are and where they're coming from. We finally did get contacts with Toyota Motor Credit, and they were down to 20% staff on. And they basically were saying, I told them what our proposal was. They said, okay. I said, so what do you want? Well, send us an email on the VIN, and if we have no interest, we'll tell you. And that's what we're using as for proof of payoff.
For lease.
Correct. So we've done a lot of creative things, but...
Are those titles going to show up somewhere, though?
No, because, you know, this is the crazy thing. That's an excellent question. No, they won't, because our title cancels their title out. And that's how, there's no bad way of this, because the TLR, which all these big lenders and everyone has access to, they see that the state of Utah issued a title on this date. So if they have a problem, they're reaching out to us. That's way better than just sitting there and waiting. So a lot of times, yes, we've had some mad people call us up.
Man.
And then we, it's funny because I had an auction just call me up and just, man, they just gave it to me. And I pulled the paperwork because we have a process that we follow. And I said, oh no, you got paid, here's your check. They're like, oh, they had no records. That's how bad they are right now. We had, not only do we have the record from the dealer, I sent my investigator down there immediately. We pulled the flooring company payment and the auction payment, and they had no record of that, but we did.
Wow.
So, you know, it's a lot of it's like what Clint said, they're using COVID as an excuse for everything right now, and it's not accurate. Some of it is they have it, they're not letting it catch up, and then I guess some of it from your title clerk's own mouths are saying that they've always had this problems, just not as bad now.
Yeah, these are not new problems.
No.
They just got worse. But there are certain states that you just go, oh crap.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter COVID or prior to COVID. It's a problem.
But Scott Smith has supported us, the executive director of the Tax Commission, has supported us on this 150%.
When Alan's extradited to Clark County, Nevada, I'll keep the process
yeah.
going.
And then obviously our attorney that we will have on staff is going to help with this significantly. It's going to be there's going to be a lot of adjustments this year because it's in our budget request that's been approved. So we really will have an attorney probably as soon as maybe March. It could happen that quick. I don't know that for sure. I get different dates thrown at me all the time, but I know it'll be before July because I've reached out. The AG's office has reached out to me several times. That will change the face of our division as far as adjudicated cases, getting things through, because now we're not going to go through the DA's office. We're going to go through the Attorney General's office, and we're going to have a lot of things to deal with as far as we'll be tracking dispositions more than we have never tracked dispositions. And if you don't know what that is, that's the end result. Our stats have all been driven because we're not an originating agency through what's that organization that tracks the criminal counts? Our ORI? It'll come to me in a minute. We have never tracked disposition at MVD. We just track what's been filed. So when other board members made comments, well, MVD issues a ticket and we get it dismissed, that infuriates me, because why do that? If we're not going to get the result that we need to improve, then that's not going to help us. And that was one of the main arguments that we wrote when I did my presentation to the AG's office, was that fact that was brought up in our board meeting in June. So we are definitely anticipating great success there. And then, you know what, maybe we'll have some law changes that maybe we don't need to do things this way, because there's no doubt, if you look at the codes, they're old. And we're not even touching the surface of internet cells. We're so far archaic on those things, and some of the jurisdictional issues on how we're gonna prosecute those charges. I get calls on it every week from other jurisdictions, because I'm on a board, a law enforcement board, where they're asking us what we're doing, and we're not doing nothing. And they're not doing anything, but there's a lot of squeeze coming on right now, because California, if a customer in California buys a car in Utah from a dealer and you're doing it on the internet, they say they have jurisdiction. If you're in violation of their laws, they will prosecute. So there's a bunch of dealers that will not sell to a California customer unless they come. And which the code really says that anyway. So we're really pushing the envelope on those type of things, but everyone knows they're happening. It's just, what are we going to do about it, and do we need to figure out a way that's best for the industry to help this or circumvent it? So those are really things that we should focus on this year for MVD side, because we've been talking about, how long have you been on our board, Kirk?
3 years.
And I guarantee we've talked about internet sales almost every time, and nothing's been done about internet sales. We really need to put, because I mean, AMBA, which is a national organization, has asked us to come up with best practices for internet sales recommendations. And it's been a slow, because a lot of the jurisdictions don't want to be the format for the operational model. And I've done many of those before, and they've used Utah. We don't really have a lot to pattern it after right now. Yes, sir.
Mr. Chair, can I mention, we have four main committees within our association. I'm sure Wayne has a similar thing. And we have e-commerce task force that we've worked on for a long time. These are some of the issues. This is a hard issue. There's a piece of legislation that is bill file has been opened. You haven't seen the language. Talks about internet sales and processes, etc. And so I don't think that bill is going to go anywhere this year, because we got to make sure that it dovetails with the franchise system and it doesn't cause that cog to be out of sync. And so our task force, again, is going to look at this in heavy detail, because got to be so careful that we don't twist one place and impose in the other. And so we're going to be looking at this probably during the session, but not to have anything done, but after the session to see if we can work through this again. We looked at it. Remember, we had some stuff last year, and we said, no, we're not going to do that. So we're looking at it again. So it's a problem. I don't... It's just a problem that we don't know the solution quite yet. I agree with you. It's just a problem.
Well, just keep in mind that some of the manufacturers could use our lack of laws in their advantage if they decided to do a certain way.
Yes.
There's no doubt, I mean, that they are thinking that. I mean, it's in the automotive news all the time.
I have language from the manufacturer currently. That's
so.
Any other MVD issues?
I did want to bring up one more thing. As it's 2022 now, and the biggest struggle that we're actually having as a division, and I think it's important to know that obviously we made a huge shift in our focus since I became the director in 2016. I can't believe we're coming up on 6 years already. But it has been a huge philosophical change on how we focused on the industry more after Garf attempted to file a lawsuit against the state for us not representing the industry, which Craig was at that meeting. We switched over immediately, and I agreed with that. I always felt that way, and I know Cole felt that way as well. Larry did, and that's why we made the adjustments that we did, where we're not going to come to this board and report our auto theft stats. We're not going to come to this board and report our citation stats for registration enforcement. But as we move into what 18 months ago, we had a society that wanted to defund the police and wanted to get rid of law enforcement. Now I'm facing budgetary issues that are nightmarish proportions, because I can't keep my staff because they're getting poached by other agencies, including the Highway Patrol, which we're benchmarked higher than the Highway Patrol, and I'm losing guys left and right. Like, Cole, give them those numbers on the three, the last three employees that we lost.
Yeah, their ending wage when they left here was 2044, 2362, and 2460 something. And they're all over $42 an hour now with other agencies.
Yeah, the Highway Patrol is raising their entry level to $30 an hour, and more than 50% of my staff is below $30 an hour. It's unbelievable. And I'm not, whether I'm for it, against it, that's not what I'm here to talk about. We are a unique agency. And if I don't have guys that are trained investigators, I can't go recruit a trooper, and I'm not capping on the Highway Patrol, but I would have to train a trooper to come here and be an investigator. That's why we're benchmarked two steps higher. But they're giving guys, they just try to steal one of my best employees. He was our employee of the year last year. They offered him a $10,000 signing bonus and $40 an hour. That was just a month ago. He is making $32 an hour here. Yes, sir.
So what are you going to do?
I don't know. I'm really strapped right now. We have all the funding we need. It's just about disbursement of it. This isn't a plea to ask the industry to raise temporary permits. We are funded not by the general fund, just so you know. We only are funded by our 98% of our operational budget is funded by the sale of temporary permits. So we are funded by the industry. And I think that everyone has to understand that. We since 2016, we have banked over $5 million. So those are monies that we always, at the end of the year, we'd go on a spending spree and just buy. Like, I have a briefcase in my office that cost over $100,000 on something we have never opened up. I give you my word, as a taxpayer, we have not done that since I became the director.
Thank you.
We do not waste any of our money, and we have banked that money. And it's for the I hate the word rainy day fund, but it's for if we go into recession and the temporary permit sales drop, we have to have that money to pay our staff. So, because our case count would go up in theory because of failure to deliver title issues or whatever they are. It's not always negative. Sometimes we can assist the industry like we've done now versus punish the industry. If we don't have funds, we can't keep staff and we have to let people go.
You're just talking about good business management, though. But what you're left with is a responsibility to see that your people are properly paid. And if you're not competitive, then you've got to do something about it. And if somewhere in the state that allowing some to run amok and then at the peril of everybody else, seems to me, as leaders in your departments and other departments, you got to get your heads together or you'll just cannibalize one another. How stupid is that?
That's the problem.
Oh, like last week, one of my guys was right in the area of that homicide in West Valley with the two juveniles. He was right there. He helped out, and West Valley was trying to recruit him the whole time he was there. And if you've got 10 years experience, which all of our guys do, they do a lateral year for year, and they're going to get topped out at any agency. And so all of our guys would be topped out if they left somewhere else.
So just keeping things in perspective, like Cole's saying, we get letters like that all the time. So when I took over, we had 25 investigators. And our case count investigations was just under 3,000. So we have 18 sworn investigators, including us three here, and we almost did 6,000 cases last year. So we were within 40 of 6,000, right?
Yeah.
Okay, with less people, and our prosecution rate's higher than it's ever been. We're well over 70% in adjudication, but that comes at a cost. The UHP appeared before a legislative law enforcement committee and said they have 800 officers, just so you know, and they said they don't do any registration enforcement. Now, if you believe that, so they said that MBD does all the registration enforcement. That's not accurate. So I mean that those things, you have to keep that in perspective. That if that's what it really we're tasked to, then I don't have the resources to do investigations. I don't have the resources to. This is where I'm getting myself in trouble. Babysit the DMV. Those a lot of issues that I have to deal with. That I need some assistance in those type of resources. And then, I mean, if it comes down to that I have 18 guys or whatever we go with, and you're doing this, and you're doing this, and you're doing this, and then evaluate the curves, then that's where I'm at. But
well,
I don't have that.
Aren't you? This is above our pay grade. I mean, this is interagency problems. It seems to me you've got to go to your higher-ups and say, lay this out. so you don't cannibalize each other. Where does it stop? And you're just trading people back and forth.
It's about FTEs, though. So, like, if you have, like, if I have X amount of FTEs, and I reclassified officer positions to help with licensing. Because if you remember, if you ever came to MVD, I know you did, I saw you here all the time, the line used to be out the door at renewal time. So we have dumped a ton of funds into online services, which, in all honesty, you'd have to admit this, Wayne, you don't even have to come into our office.
That's what we tell them.
Everything you could do online, and I promise you, I'm not lying to you, if there's a problem with renewals, it's not our fault anymore. Everything is online and you can do it. It really comes down to, but we still spend a ton of 2 months, maybe even more,
yeah,
2 months of our resources getting people licensed, because if we don't get them licensed, then I got other issues to worry about. And that's the problem. Our main commitment is licensing, because I believe that licensing prevents complaints. Complaints helps get consumer confidence. Those are tight. I think they're all lined up. So I I'm shamefully admitting that I reclassified those spots because I thought the needs were here. But these other issues are growing, and I can't go back and say, oh, I want this officer spot back. I've asked for more FTEs. They keep declining me. They're not going to give me more. We just reclassified an officer spot for a dismantling permit project that we have. It took, they were 2.5 years behind. Us three right here got that whole project done in a month. We did it, not our staff, us did it. And we did it for a point, but now I've asked for the FTE back, they won't give it to us.
Who is they?
The state, the tax commission.
Tax commissioners?
The tax commission,
yeah.
Executive director levels. And I shamefully admit that it's not, our executive director says it'll happen, but it's the budgetary process, it's just bureaucracy.
Yes.
Can I just mention, so last week, Jason and Wayne and I were in a meeting with the Business Coalition and the speaker, and he brought up that issue of law enforcement and the prison and different departments of government.
Cannibalism.
And you know, just exactly what you were talking about, and I brought up the fact of that the enforcement folks and how the disparity is hurting us. And it's a dilemma they understand. But maybe I'd ask you this question, Alan. Is there a way, is it an appropriations? Is it us going to Scott? Is it going up to Commissioner Valentine? Is it going to the Speaker or the President or the Governor? I mean, we all like enforcement. Highway Patrol, they've got their troopers. But this is the industry. Now, we don't care about the rest of them, because we do. We care about this industry because it's 14% to 17% of the taxable sales in Utah. Are you
yeah,
kidding?
Exactly.
It's huge.
And the money's coming from the dealers that
they
have in their
hands. It's massive.
And so they won't let us disperse it.
Where, maybe offline, you could help us say, you know, Jason, Craig, Wayne, Stephen, John, Kirk, Clint, wherever, tell us where we need to go, because we cannot afford to have you short staff, been there, done that, and being pirated from someplace else, because this is as big as anything else in this state. So just with that open, I know they're aware of it. We've made mention personally in that meeting about it. And so we can get to those people if we need, because it can't continue. You just can't continue to do what you do, Alan.
I know.
You guys are too good.
Is there a bill that's been proposed?
There's a bunch of bills right now. I could give you so many numbers right now. The shameful thing is I'm not a, my dad's a private sector guy. I'm a private sector guy. So I know a lot of you guys are looking at me like, you don't understand this. Well, I have to pay my good employees the same thing as I had to pay my bad employees. And I have employees, I would shamefully admit to you, that if they left, I wouldn't lose any sleep over it. And I'd rather hire someone that wants to be here and wants to do the work and wants to learn the craft.
You can't bonus people.
It's almost impossible, and we do the best we can, but when you have a career ladder, you have steps, and you have all this stuff, the governor hasn't given, we have not, I'm not picking on any governor, but the last 10 plus years, we haven't even had a merit increase. It's all been a cost of living. So it really, there's no separation. There's no, the only way that you get separation is through promotion. We're a small agency. We don't have a lot of promotions.
You know, your counterparts in other industries, far bigger budgets, far more latitude, and they're taking your people. Is that right?
Yeah, and it's going to catch up with them because they have to have, a lot of them are counting on the Amazon money for sales tax to compensate those packages. I have friends like my friend Eric Young, the chief of police of Ogden, says he's on a three-year window right now where he's really going to have to worry in 3 years where the money's going to come from, because he doesn't believe that the money is there like West Valley is claiming that they have. And those are all things that are just a nightmare. And I guess the painful reality is we may lose people. And there is a learning curve to doing our job. There's no doubt about it. We've done an outstanding job with us picking up the slack. I'm saying us three and then our two lieutenants. But it's been hard to retain staff.
And once we lose that staff, no one wants to apply for $20 an hour.
So we just had an opening years ago. And when I applied here, I came here in 2000. There was two openings and there was about 50 applicants. When we just had an opening last time, we had five applicants. And we're not alone. The Highway Patrol says the same thing. Colonel Rappage told me they used to have 2,000 to 3,000 people come and take the initial PT test. And now that was for like 20 openings. And now they have 50 openings plus, and they'll have 20 candidates show up. So, and
but they have a signing bonus they can offer too.
Quality you're giving is much, much less.
Well, we've done a good job because we've reached out to people and we try to poach them from other places, just like they're doing too. So it is no different. But then they'll come here and they'll say, ooh, you know, it is what it is. I mean, if I can get a trooper, a quality UHP guy, they get a raise here. And then when we bring them over, they're making more than our guys that have been here for 8 years. Because they have a career ladder. They're topped out after, I think it's 11 years?
10.
They're topped out. Our guys are not there, but we're higher now than we've been ever. So I basically, to make a long story short, we could go on this forever. This is a trend we're in right now. If you have opportunities to talk to elected officials or whatever, or who you mentioned, that would be appreciated.
Well, the next topic here is legislative issues. Should we be trying to make this a legislative issue?
I don't know if that's the right answer. I don't know. Is it?
Well, I'll tell you what. Law enforcement, Highway Patrol has a huge lobby. Others have a huge lobby. We're your lobby.
If they get something, we'll get it. It's just probably be a year behind. But that, I mean, look, if they, the entry level for the Highway Patrol is what, like $19 an hour right now? It's something like that. They pay a trooper one $19 an hour. If they raise it to $30 an hour, that is gonna have a huge effect on our division. There is no question about that.
It just $18 a big dollar.
Because when they do this,
I know.
Right.
Can I just add one more comment?
Sure.
Mr. Chairman.
Please.
I just came from my board meeting from my used car dealer group, and I would say that probably five different times through the different discussions we had about the subjects we were covering, MBED came up, and every one of them were very positive on all the things you have done for our industry. So from our side, we see success from what you're doing, and we express our appreciation to do that. And I think we need to fight for that to make sure that we're getting it.
Let me just make one last point. The success of MVD rests on my shoulders to train the guys that are up and coming. In my opinion, we haven't done a very good job of that because we can't keep the guys that we want to take over because they leave for more money. Brian Ellington is a perfect example. He was our up and he was going, I made him a, I mean, we have never done this. When he was leaving, he left to Salt Lake City. So he was on our strike force with Salt Lake City for the auto theft unit. I will never, ever put another investigator on a strike force ever again, including the Highway Patrol or SBI, which I told Commissioner Jess Anderson that I would not send anybody because every time we've done that, they stole our employee, every time. If that continues to go on, it's going to put us really – Brian left going from Salt Lake. He was on this strike force. He got a $14 an hour raise. Barry Connor was the director at the time. He gave me authorization to sign him a letter guaranteeing him he would be the next sergeant. He left. In my opinion, and Cole knows more about this, it's more his job, we have not replaced that quality of a worker. Yes, we have great workers and we've hired some really good ones, but nothing like him. Because he would have been a lieutenant right now. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, definitely.
He would have been. So that type of thing, and in all fairness, I look at him from a not a different hat, saying, I can't even pay you $5 an hour more. If it's about feeding your family or having a better lifestyle, you got to take the $14 an hour. And ultimately, he did. That was a big loss. Brett Crowley, the investigator down south, as wages increase down there, would Brett leave? I hope not, but he may. I mean, the bill, if that bill passes that allows a 60-day turnover where they can go back into the workforce, I may lose guys. And, you know, to me, they asked me if I supported it, and I told them I did not support that bill. Because if it wasn't for the bill that's in place now, I wouldn't be the director here. So I can't change my stripes because it's something that would benefit me now. That would be not right.
So, at least now that we're in your corner and we support the things you're trying to do, and if we can be involved in a way that would assist you, please let us know.
I guess we would turn the time over to Wayne and Craig about legislative items, because some of them I don't know about.
Start with you, Wayne, any legislative items? I would really love to say no. But there is, I don't want to go into, because in the interest of time, I have, I know, 68 bills on my watch list right now.
68.
There are over three, I think the last count this morning was 311, I think, pre-filed bills have been numbered now.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be a lot more.
700 so, more. 700.
Probably almost 1,000 more by the time we get through. But I don't worry about the ones we know about numbers. The ones I worry about are the ones we don't know about. Those are always the problematic ones. There are a couple of things that, one of those that I just wanted to make this board aware of was the catalytic converter bill. It's House Bill 38. It has to do with who's going to be responsible for catalytic converter enforcement, that sort of thing, and responsibilities, whether it goes to the police or to the metal recyclers. That's, I met with their lobbyist last week, talked through all the details of where the metal people are versus law enforcement. Everybody's kind of doing one of these things about who should enforce and so forth. The bottom line for us is it's a big problem. We're seeing catalytic converter thefts all the time. I asked all my board members to raise their hand of how many who had a catalytic converter. There was not one that didn't raise their hand, you know, for some of the ones they had taken. It's a very expensive proposition. They can go in with the Sawzall in a matter of seconds, take a converter they can sell in the marketplace for thousands of dollars. So we're gonna watch that very carefully and kind of let the dust settle for who's gonna point fingers at whom for enforcement, but I think that's an important one that we ought to be looking at.
According to the AG's office, Nate Mutter said he was the one that drafted that, made the recommendations for that. We had no input on that bill. I honestly think we've done a request to bring back our compliance section, which does handle recyclers and dismantlers. We would love to take that on, but we definitely couldn't do it for free. I mean, I'm not saying free, we would need FTEs for that. And I don't know if would be fair for that to come out of our temporary permit money. It probably should come from a legislative note, because it is there. Just so you know, they are licensees. So recyclers, if they take cars or license, they're dismantlers. Or as we spoke before, maybe we have a change of a license and add a crusher's license. But dismantlers aren't bonded. They have no bond. There's a lot of gray areas there now with these catalytic converter issues. And I honestly believe, Wayne, that most of the people that are stealing these catalytic converters, if they're not just bringing them to a muffler shop for instant money, they can break down a catalytic converter and probably get thousands of dollars if they know how to process the metals that are in the filters. I did a story on that in 2008, and it was amazing that they didn't quote on that. It was with the Tribune. and we had two guys that Cole's crew busted, and we had them interviewed by them, and they explained what they did with it. It's unbelievable what they if they know what they're doing, how much money they can make.
Well, my comment to the people involved that I talked with was, it would be great to have something that would help protect particularly our dealers, but also the public. But more importantly, we got to have a law that makes sense, that's enforceable.
Out of teeth.
We need law enforcement and the recyclers and every party involved in this to have something that works so that one isn't going to do this to the others. So the other, there's a couple other bills that we're watching. There was a bill up there on VIN inspections. We want to make sure that industry is still able to do VIN inspections on out-of-state titles. There was another bill that is out, I'll call it Allen's bill, because it deals with the AG's office, and that changes Senator Harper's bill, right?
Is that the one about RS, I'm an attorney?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Emphatically, do not call that Allen's bill.
I know I
get it right. Oh, that would not be good.
It's Wayne Harper bill. I understand. I just see if I can get a rise out of it.
I'll be in someone's office by the end of the day.
And there are obviously, as we always have, a number of bills on specialty plates. My last understanding is that the tax commission was going to look into not allowing any of the vanity plates where you could write your own numbers on there because of recent court cases. But that doesn't change any of the plates that we have currently, and it doesn't change anything for the special group plates like a university plate or a autism plate or a Boy Scout plate or whatever that is. I think there are some suggestions that we have made to them that would make a lot of sense to simplify that, because we spend a lot of time doing specialty plates in our office, and having to put decals on plates and all that is not cost effective for the state. That could be done responsible. But the fun and games just began today, so the next 45 days nobody's safe. So we'll hopefully report next time what the results of that is. I did want to mention on the legislative side, if I could, it's not really legislative, but could be considered, I guess, and that's the rule that we talked about last summer, changing some of those and updating some of the rules where there was a component piece of that that dealt with the dock fee sign, and that section that's in the code where the dealer is required to put in there, and it's the for additional and profit piece that was coming out of that. That was heard by the tax commission at their commission meeting last week, Tuesday or Wednesday, whatever it was. And that is out for public comment, but they only did that dock fee piece. And there was some discussion that I had with the with Jason, the legislative analyst here at the tax commission, concerning right now in the rule it says that amount that you put in there, that doesn't have to be a number, it can be words and a description of or certain things. And when we did our piece, when we reviewed this, we also included that the amount on the contract needs to go in there as well. So that apparently had been fixed. That's what we originally recommended, and they didn't see that it needed to change, but after further explanation, they said that made sense. So I'm just waiting for that document to come out now so we make sure they make those changes. They will have open comment for 30 days, which will put us at their next tax commission hearing on March, I think it's the 10th or something. They will, based on comments and so forth, should approve that for the doc fee sign. And then all the rest of it, they said the commissioner didn't disagree with, but because of all the stuff going on legislatively, they didn't want to deal with that right now. They'll put that on public comment in March and have that ready for their April tax commission meeting. So we're hoping, my comment to them was, we'd like to have that all done. And we've been talking about that for way too long. We need to get that project.
Thank you, Wade. Can I ask a question, Mr. Chair?
Please, we'd like you to come in now too.
So here's my question. Did they address the vehicles in transit issue there?
No, as I mentioned, the only piece that is being considered is the dock fee sign, that provision in the dock. The only set where there was a number of sections, which was the piece you're talking about, that's in a different section. The only section of the rules, 877.23b, paragraph 14, and that's the dock fee sign. That's all that's being considered right now. So all those other things we talked about pricing, about freight, about all those other things, are not going to take place yet.
Wayne?
The dolphins.
Troubling.
Yes.
Any other legislative issues besides that you want to?
I just want to ask Wayne a question.
Yeah.
On HB 180, how are your power sports dealers accepting the fact that they can't sell a vehicle without getting proof that someone passed the safety?
I just got language on that, and they're going to hate it. And I see a bunch of holes where this is the one requiring education.
Yeah, we can't sell it to somebody that can't show you their education.
So there's several provisions with that. One of them is writing. If you want to write one, the law currently says that if you have a valid Utah driver's license, you're legally good. That line has been deleted. And it says you have to take the education course to be able to write. And there's no provision where it says if I wrote for 30 years, would I still be required the way it's written? Yes, you would. It also says in there that if you're selling power sport equipment, and thank you for reminding me about that, if you're selling power sport equipment, both new and used, you would be restricted from using any power, or selling any power sport equipment to anybody who couldn't verify that they have taken the education course. So, and renting as well.
Okay.
So then how do you deal with the public who have people coming from out of town, and there's all of a sudden all these, you know, 35 questions that this doesn't seem to flow in that pretty.
Well, what about the liability of the dealer if he sells one to someone that and they didn't get the proof and they get hurt?
Exactly. Liability is an issue.
Think of all the rental places,
put them out of business.
But so,
and tourism.
I couldn't buy Clint a ATV unless I was educated, even though I'm never going to ride it.
Well, that's the other hole that's in there. So
if I wasn't educated, are you liable?
If I'm the buyer and I buy my grandson a small little four-wheeler, then and I have the education, it doesn't matter if he does, right? Okay, or if I'm buying it, what is it going to solve?
Nope. Here's the wording on the bill right here.
We don't know who use is.
You don't have to have a driver's license to buy a car, I don't think, do you?
No.
No.
You don't.
I sold a blind man a car. I knew he wasn't going to buy it, but he bought it for his driver.
Yeah.
Exactly. This sounds like a bad bill.
It is. So the language, we knew something was coming, but the language just came out,
Is that Brambles, Bill?
Sorry?
Is that Brambles?
No. This is...
Someone that doesn't know what the hell they're doing. Or is it Bill Closer?
Pretty much. Schmidt, I'll give you a number.
So can you get this struck down in committee type of thing?
It's 180. It's HB 180.
HB 180, yep.
Who did that?
I was just going to look, but I just came out.
It's on the first.
I have a copy.
Yeah, it's on there.
Yeah, so is that something you can get killed in committee?
Well, I'm hoping we'll never come to committee.
You also know about the license plate changes for ATVs and off-road, right?
Yes, there's going to be a new license.
The green one.
Required no more decal.
The pretty green, plate.
And it's going to be green. So that way you're how can you
Albrecht.
Is that one going to pass, the plate one, or not?
It's all part of the same one.
I haven't met with the sponsor yet.
So Albrecht is carrying that. We talked to him last week. He's an amiable guy in pride, and he's an attorney. And so I suspect that this language, who would you propose me now? Would that be
good? Probably one of his constituents.
Jorgensen's is down there in Richfield. I can't imagine who would do that.
Yeah.
Is he from down there?
Right? Richfield, yeah.
Jorgensen would throw a fit over that.
And his tourism board's going to crucify him.
Yeah, I believe he's an attorney.
Yeah.
We talked to him. Yeah, for sure.
On like
there's also a bill to increase the weight of the class of ATV 2, and mostly that's due to the manufacturing with the side-by-sides that they used to be, 2,500 pounds now? It's going to be raised to 3,500 and up.
Oh, boy.
Wait till the motorcycle enthusiasts have to find a way to put that green plate on their motorcycle.
Put it on the front plate.
To get rid of the decals. There's a lot of problems with the decal issues with ATVs and UTVs, and especially when you can have a street legal ATV or UTV. The problem is a lot of the numbers on the decals and theories should come back to something. Doesn't happen a lot.
Well, the other thing is, how is enforcement going to tell if it's street legal or not street legal? Because I could put a plate on there, a green plate, and how do I know it's legal?
The plate thing is debatable. Arizona does the plate thing. It has been doing it for a lot of years.
Yeah.
I don't think any people that have ATVs or UTVs would care. They probably would support that.
Yeah.
But, like, I have dirt bikes, and there's no place to put a plate on a dirt bike.
Exactly.
And if you're going to do it for officer safety issues and registration enforcement, you're going to see those things flying by? Really?
I don't know what the genesis is yet.
They're this big. You can't even see a motorcycle blade unless you get right on them. So I don't know what the real motivational factor is.
You ever said that legislators sometimes don't think things through all the way and what the impact is. So not pick on anybody particularly.
Theft is up on ATVs and UTVs and motorcycles in our state significantly. And Idaho, just so you know, if you take in any of those things and trade, you'd be wise to call us and have us look into it, because Idaho is the theft capital of off-road vehicles in the whole West. I mean, when I get told that by investigators in Mississippi, that's not good. So just keep that in mind. We're okay with what we do for registration and what we do for the DNR and the agencies that do enforce off-road violations. That Utah's not on anyone's radar as far as title washing or clone vehicle stuff, especially with side-by-sides and ATVs. But we obviously can get better.
We've talked about a lot of issues here, but I'm not the easier. I mean, we are coming up with solutions. Welcome to our things, and I don't know what we can do as a board to assist you in those. If you would get back to us with things that you think that we should try to do to assist you or to help think with some of these legislative things or other things, please let us know so that we feel like that we're helping this thing be better. That's the whole idea, you know, so.
Well, it's a difficult position for me, because I am a conservative, you know, and I don't care what the consequences go with that. But Cole was really on me to talk about it today, and it's very uncomfortable for me to talk about, because I do believe and I should be able to compensate my best employees, yeah, and the ones that are marketable that think they can go somewhere else they can. I just don't have an answer for that.
Seems to me you need to be talking to the people you report to.
And I do all the time.
Don't care.
I don't know if I'd say that's an accurate indication, yeah, that they don't care. It's just it's the whole system.
Top priority for them.
Yeah. Well,
it's a bigger problem statewide.
Well, other agencies are figuring a way to do it. You know, I mean, I'm not imposing that I'm equivalent to the director of the Highway Patrol, but he's at like $73 an hour and I'm at 50. And it's like, then you have the insurance fraud guy is at $59 an hour. I'm at 50, and I have a bigger agency than him. I mean, I don't know how they're doing it. They do it somehow, but we don't do it.
Who's the decision maker? Who can be the one that can say, yeah, you can pay this? Who decides that?
It's a three-headed monster. I think Scott Smith, I got to make this emphatically clear. He has supported us on every quest that we have done. It just has always been too little too late. And you have a budgetary issue. You have tax commission rules that the most I can give for, so like me, I'm a perfect example. When I went from lieutenant to director, I missed the assistant director. I lost out on an 11% advancement that I never got. And there's no way around it, because the tax commission has a policy that when you get a promotion, the max you can get is 11%, even unless I'm at the bottom of the range. Well, our ranges are so bad. So that's some of the problem that we have.
So this is tax commission rules that are applied to multiple departments. Is that accurate?
Just for the tax commission.
But multiple departments?
Correct.
So they would have to change those rules to apply differently to your department?
Absolutely. That's exactly
and
what.
And who would be the one that could make that decision? Is that a legislative thing? Is it a rule change? Like, who?
I think it would be directed to Scott Smith, I believe.
And the commissioner, more likely be a rule.
A what?
Rule. Which the commissioners decide. Because that's
all. I would almost lay you that it's just a philosophy. I don't know if I've ever seen anything in rules. I just think it's a tax commission philosophy.
Administrative bulletin.
I don't know.
We've always done it that way.
They just have always told, yeah. That is the common rule of thread. We have always done it that way.
Well, so it's not in writing, it's kind of like,
I don't,
protocol,
I
d- this is how we do
I don't know the answer to that question. That's a great question.
Can I make a suggestion, Mr. Chair? I think that it would be appropriate for us as a community served by MBED to ask that question of Scott and Commissioner Valentine and that group. We interact with the Highway Patrol. We all have friends in enforcement within our own neighborhood. My neighbor is the Sandy Cop, et cetera. He and I had a discussion 2 weeks ago about disparity, and just the same thing you're talking about. But it's probably better for us to address that question to your directors than you, because we're concerned about it, as I brought up to Speaker Wilson. Because we've got to make sure that this department continues to function, especially the way it's being run now, in the dealer-friendly, the dealer attitude, to let's see what problems we can solve before they get to be problems, taking the governor's adage and on the sign, like, make it happen, or whatever it is. So
be recklessly good.
Be recklessly good.
Recklessly good.
What's that?
Be recklessly good.
Be recklessly good. Mr. Chair, we'll take it on if it would be all right if, from our standpoint, to approach Scott. I know we know Scott. We know Commissioner Valentine very well. And that would be something that we would take as an opportunity just to give feedback.
I would appreciate it. I think we all appreciate it if you would do that and then let us know.
We'll take that aside.
A comment that I would make to you, and that's just me speaking as an individual. But I think that you need to step up and take care of your people, even if you have to dip into your rainy day funds. And then if that is depleted more than it should be, then you need to scream about you need to have those funds replenished. You know, how people, you know, we talk about people at the end of the year, they recklessly throw money against the wall. If you're doing it responsible, and then you have a reason to say, I need this replenished. But you've got to take care of your people and do your job, or they'll look at you and your group as not being effective.
No, I think it's important to also recognize that as Kirk and all of you guys have businesses, it's not just about the officers. I have support staff that are making that people at Wendy's are making more money than my support staff. And that is like unbelievable. You know, to me, I don't know. And we are trying to address that part, like, this year, but in the same breath, it's like if I give, we have different titles, we have different classifications, just like you have title clerks and warranty specialists and this, that they picked certain areas to give them increases. Next thing you know, in theory, if I give, she is a motor, what's your motor vehicle technician 3 supervisor, right?
2.
Okay, so in theory, I have 2 support staff members that I stole them from the DMV. These are like amazing people that we took from them. Like, I'm still getting beat up over it, but it was worth it. They're on a target funding increase from the governor's office that they could be making more than their boss. I can't have that. So she's going, I have to take care of her.
This isn't going to get easier. I mean, we can't even go to lunch and talk about it because there's nobody to serve us lunch. I mean, these issues are paramount, not only in your industry, but throughout everything we're dealing with. So you've got to pay attention to this.
But so, I promise you.
But Mr. Chairman, just to make sure that we're understanding, it's not that Director Shinney does not want to do this. He is not allowed to do this. Is that correct?
Well, don't you have control over those rainy day funds?
No.
You don't.
I do not.
I have to take legislative action to access it.
So that's why we need to go behind the scenes and talk to his bosses on his behalf.
I don't. I have 0.
Well, you're the manager.
There is no way. I mean, it has to be an appropriation act, and it has to be like I have to justify it's for this. It's like unbelievable.
So that's why we need to go on their behalf, speak to Commissioner Valentine and Scott Smith.
Then I think think we'd all agree to that, be supportive. So if you'll open the door, we'd be happy to do it.
We need to do it right away, because with the legislature, if we need to plug something in to make that happen. Now it's time to do it.
Well, and it goes back to the temporary permits. You remember years ago, when temporary permits, every year there had to be a legislative session to get that changed when they needed it. And so we went when it was, the chair at the time was, it'll come to me. And we went to him, he's the one that did streamlined sales tax, Commissioner, Bruce Johnson.
Bruce Johnson.
And we said, look, we can't do that anymore. We've got to have latitude for these guys to be able to move it up and down interim without the legislative session. And they were able to do that. And so, you know, we got that done. And so it's just maybe something similar that we did. We're aware of the problem. It's getting worse, Stephen, and we'll take that on.
And maybe the tool's in the toolbox. We just need to pull it out.
Yeah, that's maybe that's it. So we have a vested interest in this group.
It does take legislative action to access it according to statute.
Okay. Well, let me just end with this for all of us. We're supportive of you. We appreciate you and what you've done for us, what you continue to do for us. We would be in dire problems if we didn't have your support and help that we have, and we appreciate that. That being said, when do you want to meet again?
On your agenda.
May 7th, May 16th.
Second page of your agenda. That's all the dates for the last.
I think I want to let you guys all know, I appreciate everyone being here. It really means a lot to us, but with where we are, the health issues, it would really, if a virtual option is necessary, we can accommodate that. So keep that in mind. I mean, that's always out there. So if you need it, like Mr. Wade, if you can't make it up, we can make it happen. If any of you, anybody, just all you have to do is let us know, and Maria can provide a link that's even, you know, we can make it available to the public for comment if they don't want to be here any time. That's an option.
I would just say, if you don't mind, we have several things we're tracking as well. Maybe it's just a few different than Wayne. And so the next 44 days is going to be exciting.
As far as May the 16th, I'm on an airplane to Oberon again to the Passion Play that very day. So I wouldn't even be able to be. But Kurt can handle that if you want to hold it that day.
Or we can evaluate whatever the board wants.
Well, why don't we go ahead and set that date, and then if you find it necessary with all these legislative issues, then we can move it forward. Does that date work for everybody?
When are you leaving?
The 16th. I need that very day.
March.
May.
Well, the legislature will be over the
first of three. We have to have three.
You have to have three, and
maybe the 9th or something.
I think we can look at it as information comes, because we don't even know really, right? I mean, if the numbers get too high, a lot of the stuff will get shelved, won't it?
The 8th is
yeah,
right.
The bills, yeah.
They'll
prioritize.
The 8th is Mother's Day with that fellow.
No, the 9th.
I know, but for people being out of town or having issues. I'll do whatever what would work for everybody. I'm happy to let her just handle that. I'm afraid we might be meeting before that, though. If we can get some assistance on these issues, I don't know.
We can always call an emergency meeting.
Yeah, we can do that anytime.
We need to make sure we have enough people to have a quorum.
That's why
I got three.
Okay?
Three present.
Yeah, three. Bonjour.
Everybody else okay? Okay, well, let's just leave it then what it is. We'll let Kirk handle it. And then as far as the other, if we need to have a meeting, emergency meeting, we'll do it. All right, everybody else okay? If there's nothing else, we have a call to adjourn.
Motion that we adjourn, Mr. Chairman.
We have a motion. Have a second. Thank you, everybody. I appreciate your. This is frustrating meeting for me. I
so much appreciate all that's being done, and you can't be effective with your hands tied behind your back as effective as you want to.